Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I missed being with you live last Tuesday because I was in Victoria, B.C., and actually I was on the radio there on CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, doing an interview about dementia and relationships. Today, we're going to have something quite different. Have you heard that more than just a feeling, love is an action? And two men taking action are Dr. Mitch Tepper on this program 2 weeks ago, a sex educator, and Dr. Mark Schoen on this program in January. And these two men are making a big difference. They're collaborating on a film called Making Love After War. And it is a labor of love, isn't it, Dr. Mitch and Dr. Mark? A labor of love.
It sure is.
Yeah. I know you're raising money, and we'll talk, as we get into the program, we'll talk more about that. This is very, very important. So we've got Dr. Mitch Tepper on one line and Dr. Mark Schoen on the other. And perhaps you, Dr. Mitch, can tell us what Love After War, the documentary that you are currently filming, producing, what is it about? What is it about?
Well, Love After War is about patriotic young men and women who volunteer to defend their country. They go on to experience catastrophic injuries, and they come home to face emotional and physical barriers to intimacy. So that's the kind of the plot line, the storyline. We developed this concept the need for this documentary because, you know, there's very little information about intimacy issues for injured veterans. And, you know, we know back in 2006 when I got involved with this, the news was that failed intimate relationships were the leading cause of suicide amongst, you know, Army members have committed suicides, and failed intimate relationships continue to be either a cause of suicide or at least a stressor in relationships for military folks, and even more so when there's either physical or mental health issues. So, you know, I've been working on this for 10 years and looking for some positive stories to tell people. And so, you know, this will, you know, create some visual images with storytelling of some couples who are doing well despite, you know, grievous or catastrophic injuries.
And it's got to be a very passionate project for both you and Mark, because you could literally be saving lives, preventing suicide by giving this kind of information and hope to the disabled veterans. And I'm just, this is very exciting. And you've got to both feel quite passionate about it. So, Mark, what inspired you to take on this project with Mitch?
Well, I've known Mitch for many years, and I know his passion for this subject area. And I certainly don't know the subject the way Mitch does, but I've learned a lot in the few months that we've been working together, and I didn't know the stories. The first interview, I was sitting, you know, behind the camera, and I literally cried when I heard this story. I mean, I couldn't help myself, and I couldn't believe that here we have a young man who gets out of high school, volunteers to go into the military, risks his life, gets, as Mitch called it, a catastrophic injury.
Yes.
And he didn't get the kind of help he really needed. And I just couldn't believe it. So I was thrown into the water, not realizing how serious this issue is.
Yeah. And you are a sensitive guy, witness your even your ability or your, yes, to cry when you heard these stories. And most women really love sensitive, emotional men. And you're one of those guys, Mark.
Well, I can't imagine.
And it comes through
anyone,
in your filmmaking, too.
Well, thank you. But I can't imagine anyone hearing these stories and not crying. So.
Yes, yes, of course. And some people can go to your website, Dr. Mark, which is sexsmartfilms.com. And there is a preview of the documentary that you and Mitch are making.
It's also on the loveafterwar.org website.
Loveafterwar.org.
Yes.
Okay.
So
and,
we have lots of choices.
Yeah. So you're in the process of making the documentary. And so, Mitch, can you talk a little bit about some of the couples, the individuals that you've interviewed so far, and
sure.
and what that's been like?
Well, you know, I don't know if Mark remembers, but several years ago, I talked to him about this project that I was just conceiving, and he just finished Trans. And he said, well, you're looking at like 3 years of work, you know, with no pay. And he didn't say anything more. But then I showed him the first interview I did. And this was with the one that you saw on the website. It's with it's an Army Sergeant First Class, Aaron Causey. And
yes.
He was an explosive ordnance disposal operator.
Yeah.
So he was in Afghanistan and, you know, he was doing his job and he stepped on an IED, an improvised explosive device, and he suffered a multiple limb loss. So he lost both legs above the knee. He had lost fingers. He has a mild TBI, and he also lost a testicle in a third. So not only was he faced with all these physical disabilities, he also was faced with fertility issues. And he was married to Kat Causey only 18 months when this happened. So, you know, at the time, these services, assistive reproductive technology services weren't paid for by the VA. And so him and Kat decided to pursue having a child while he was still in the hospital, recuperating from all these other injuries. And they went on to have their miracle baby. And so that was the first story. So I showed Mark that, and he was crying his eyes out during that.
I saw it too.
I think that's what moved him to jump on board. So he came out with me. The person he's talking about is was a chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear specialist, Manny Gonzalez. He was only 20 years old, single, and serving in the Marines at the time. And he rescued another Marine from a fire, ended up with 80% burns over his whole body, including his face. And this young man went over 15 years or around 15 years without getting the nerve up to ask anybody out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when he did, he married that woman and they have, he's, you know, the two children from her marriage, and they have they had a 19-month-old son at the time we interviewed them. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, could imagine being 20 years old in the prime of your life and having severe burns on your face. What did that do for his dating?
Well, it's unthinkable. It's unthinkable.
He was afraid to ask anyone out because of rejection, the fear of rejection.
Yeah.
So, and he got no counseling, he got plenty of support for his burns, but no counseling for his mental state.
Of course.
And,
yes.
I remember when I was 20, long time ago.
Yeah.
But I remember what I was doing and what I was wanting to do. And I couldn't imagine if that happened to me, how I would feel, how I would live. So,
because you were experiencing more typical, normal, quote, normal, end quote, fears that 20-year-olds have. But imagine what you're saying is imagine the overlays of disfiguring burns on your face, what you present to the world. And he must have also perhaps had some PTSD, as I know a lot of the vets do. And as I understand PTSD, it comes from not just experiencing, but watching, you know, guilty, horrible scenes. And they can even be similar to rape survivors where they say, oh, I should have done it differently. Doesn't that figure in here, too, as part of the mental adjustments?
The most recent couple that we interviewed was Tassambra and Casey Kimes, and they both served in the military. So they met, they married, and then he deployed to Iraq. It was supposed to be a 12-month deployment. It was a very violent time. He was there for 18 months. He said, you know, they went there with the mission to win the hearts and minds of the people, but he said that quickly went downhill because they got there, they were being fired upon, and it became, you know, save your life, get home.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was on a roof, you know, as a sniper, basically being directed to, you know, kill people, you know, based on, you know, what was going on in order to save other people. And this man had to shoot, you know, children, or at least a child being held, you know, by a bomber, you know, in order to save everyone else from the bomb going off, you know.
No, imagine.
You know, so he's there.
To make a decision like that.
And you know, you're not even.
He didn't have a
choice. You're not even the one making the decision. You're
following orders.
Someone else is on the ground assessing what's going on, right? And you're a sharpshooter. So, you know, when you get the intelligence from the person down on the ground, you know, they say, take them. You take them. You can't second guess.
And that's the military training, yeah.
Right. And it's the way it has to work. He came back after that deployment with severe PTSD. And at that time, you know, they weren't really, you know, identifying it too much. But Tassambra kind of was seeing the symptoms and brought that, you know, to his commanders. But she, you talk about, you know, she in the military in Korea experienced military sexual trauma. So she had her own issues. And together, you know, they didn't really receive any support around their intimate relationships. And this, you know, was very difficult. And then he continued to deploy. You know, he spent about 10 years away in combat out of a 15-year service. And he accumulated more disabilities. He accumulated hearing loss. He accumulated traumatic brain injury from explosions, because he went from Iraq to Afghanistan, and he drove this vehicle called a Buffalo, this big, you know, machine with like a shovel on the front, and he was clearing bombs. And so he was blown up and near explosion many times, you know, and then he was a paratrooper, and he had orthopedic injuries. He had, you know, broken a bone in his neck and his tailbone, and had some neurological issues, foot drop and incontinence. So this man, you know, he kept going back by choice. You know, he's a real hero. He didn't want to leave, you know, his other men behind. He felt he still had work to do, but this really created a lot of issues. But they are doing well now after, you know, really their own work.
So they're, and this man's name again is what?
Casey Kimes. So if you go to their Facebook page, it's Ty and Casey's Love Shack now. So if you hear some of the stories that were just heart-wrenching, and where they were in a very dark place and where they are now, it's remarkable, you know, that their marriage survived.
Yes, and Mark, you've captured all of this on film.
The stories, yes.
The stories, yes, of course.
thing that Tassambra was in the military, and she was sexually assaulted. And I remember asking her, you know, did you report it? And when I said that, her response was sort of like, you know, what a dumb question. And I looked at her, and she said, it was my commanding officer who sexually assaulted me.
Oh, that's horrific.
So, you know, these are gut-wrenching stories in that are happening to young, patriotic people in our country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Mark, I'm so glad that you have the talents you have, but I'm also in filmmaking, but I'm also so glad you've got such a big heart. Your documentary, Trans, has won awards. I've seen it a couple of times. The suicide, here's another very sensitive and difficult population with a high suicide rate, the people that are transsexuals. And so you saw a need and you told their story in a beautiful way. And by the way, people can see this documentary that Dr. Mark Schoen made, Trans, T-R-A-N-S, on the website sexsmartfilms.com. Just let's depart just
it's
for a moment, Mark.
It's also available on Amazon Prime.
Okay, good. But just let's just sideline for a moment and talk for a couple of minutes about making the trans film and maybe even some parallels with the current Making Love After War.
Well, there are a lot of parallels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're dealing with a marginalized group, there's no business in educating people about these groups.
Mm-hmm.
So to do a documentary that addresses these issues, it's difficult because it's difficult to get funding.
Yes.
Trans was done on a shoestring. We are doing the same with Love After War, but we're raising money as we're going along, and hopefully we will get some grants. But it's, you know, when you see a Hollywood film that, you know, the lowest budget you can imagine is $3 million.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
it's mind-blowing to me that we're trying to raise a couple of $100,000, and it's not easy.
And as I understand, you have raised about $28,000 so far for your current project through crowdfunding.
Yeah, Mitch has taken the lead on that and doing a great job.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's not right. Somehow it's, we need to get the word out, and I hope that this program, in its small way, or maybe bigger than we might expect way, can contribute to getting the word out, because these are very important subjects, and they're neglected very often. And of course, another parallel between trans, your documentary, and the current Making Love After War is suicide. We've got suicide rates are huge among these neglected people whose issues are just not understood by many.
And when you're...
Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, so when you're in that position, as Mark talked about, marginalized group, you feel like, you know, no one's ever going to love you. Right. And you don't feel like a whole person and you feel very disconnected. And so the pain just, you know, builds up and you just, you know, want to end the pain. You know, suicide is often, you know, about ending distress and ending pain.
Yes.
You know, it's not about really wanting to die, but, you know, there's just, you know, you go for so long and you feel just so, you know, disconnected from the world.
And hopeless, and, I would think.
And hopeless. Yeah, of course, hopeless. Yeah. And psychic pain.
And when I look at these people and I see that they've risked their lives to protect me.
Yes, yes.
And then they come home and they should be treated royally. And they're getting this treatment that is, to me, is unconscionable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had another young man, Tyler Wilson. He was 20, also a paratrooper in the Army, and he got caught in a gunfight in Afghanistan, was shot in the back multiple times, ended up with paralysis. He was someone else who took 10 years before establishing a real relationship, and now they're actually just having a baby now. But he, you know, they were dealing with trying to get coverage, and at the time the VA wasn't covering, and just even for medication for his erection, they couldn't get in the VA, and so they got the approval to go someplace else. They tried some oral stuff. It didn't work. They were prescribed injections, so they went back to the VA, and the VA said, you have to see our doctors first before we prescribe it. And they're like, you already sent us to these other doctors you approved. You got the medical records. Why do we have to start again? And so there was just in basic things like, you know, erectile function, which you would think it's a direct result of the injury, which is a direct result, you know, of what's going on, which the VA does cover, you know, pills and pumps and such, but he couldn't get in, you know, for that prescription. And so he went somewhere else. And then when it came to having a baby, they had to go raise money. They raised, I think, $30,000 or more, you know, through private things like GoFundMe. To have the
one of the things that struck me was before they went for in vitro, he, because he was paralyzed, was using pills and injections to get an erection, which were prescribed by a physician, and they knew why they were prescribing it, and no one told him. He didn't know that because he was paralyzed, he would not be able to ejaculate. So
no one told him that?
No.
So they're spending this money, and they've got high hopes that this will make the difference, and they'll be able to make a baby?
And then he himself realized that the only way to conceive is through in vitro fertilization.
Oh, and nobody told him. Oh, we've got some serious holes
in
the system where there's such a lack of communication and education.
A point I wanted to make, Diana, is that these are basic functions. So if we're, you know, doing a low level of a job on these basic functions, you go to someone like Manny who was burned, and his first question to his buddy in the ambulance was, you know, is it okay? You know, can you take my pants off? And so Manny didn't have any problems with sexual function or response, right? But no one talked to him about intimacy issues. No one said, you know, you can, someone will love you. You know, no one said, you know, you have to, you know, kind of brace yourself against rejection and go out there if you want it. But here's other people with severe burns that are happily, you know, in relationships with children. So no one offered that to him, you know, to help move forward. And no one, you know, so it's like if we don't do good with basic biological function, we're doing far worse with relationship issues.
And here's a guy, Manny, who was running out of a gas fire to safety when he saw out of the corner of his eyes one of his buddies on the ground. He turned around and went back. And that's when he caught on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So
when he what a hero. So brave to rescue a buddy. Did the buddy get rescued? Do you know?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The buddy got rescued with like 50% burns. He had 80%.
Yeah.
So he was carrying him over his shoulders.
The way we treat. So this is the way we treat a real hero.
So. Well, it's unconscionable. I'm so upset just thinking about it, and I didn't have to. Well, I'm so glad you're doing this. You know, my first exposure to the VA was about 35 years ago when I was interning for my license as a marriage and family therapist, and I needed 3,000 hours to go ahead and take the written and oral exams in Sacramento in California at the time. I worked at the VA in Menlo Park, and it was an inpatient substance abuse ward. And at that time, because it was so many years ago, there were a lot of Vietnam vets. And so I was exposed to the veterans. And these were vets who had a number of psychological and, of course, addiction problems, mostly alcohol, but also heroin, because in Vietnam, heroin was readily available. We had, at the time in Menlo Park, we had a lot of black vets who got hooked on heroin in Vietnam. And what I saw, because I was asked to do marriage counseling for the very few vets that were married, and the wives would come in because it was an inpatient ward, and I would do marriage counseling, and it mostly had to do with increasing communication between the couples, because the wife had been used to the husband being deployed away. But these were minor compared to what you all are dealing with. I mean, minor, well, who can say? It's all relative. But that was my
all
first...
All relative, yeah.
Yeah, that was my first exposure, and I've had just so much compassion for vets. I always have. And it's growing because of my conversation with you, and I hope your film, Making Love After War, when it's completed, will have wide exposure and begin to educate people and give illumination to the problems. Because I think, Mark, your film Trans did make a difference. Can you talk a little bit about the fallout from that? Because you made how long ago? 10 years ago?
No.
Not 10 years. No.
5 years ago.
5 years. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Trans came out, you know, there was no Caitlyn Jenner. There was no television show Transparent. You know, it was sort of a cutting edge topic at the time, and Trans was in about 40 film festivals or 50 film festivals. And then I personally went to about 40 universities across the country doing screenings. And it was quite an experience for me to meet with college students, hear what they had to say. And very often transgender students would show up at the screenings and talk out loud about their experience of being transgender.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a real wake-up call for a lot of people. And if you look at the reviews, there are, I don't know, 200-some-odd reviews on Amazon Prime, and most of them are 5-star.
Mm-hmm.
And you read some of the reviews, and you know, I know it's made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I've told you this story about I was at a house where people who had surgery are recovering, and a woman came up to me and said, "Are you Mark?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yes." And she gives me a big hug.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "What's this all about?" Her trans daughter just had surgery. She said when she told her she was trans, she said, "I wasn't on board. I didn't get it. Someone gave me your documentary, and it turned me around, and now here I am helping her after her surgery." So,
yeah, talk about making a difference.
And I think Love After War will also make a difference.
I think it will, too. I'm imagining that it's going to be shown for starters, in a lot of VA hospitals?
Well, we'll see.
You know,
we have a long way to go. But
I know.
I'm hoping it will raise the consciousness of society and make people want to do the right thing for these vets.
Do the right thing, yes. These vets are protecting our freedom. And then when they have catastrophic injuries like this, and it affects them in such deeply personal ways, not being able to have a relationship or having, or like in one of the cases that I think you've already filmed, the couple had been married just a short while before he was sent off to, where was it, Iraq or someplace. And then he got these injuries, and they ended up having a child. So it has a happy ending, but what they had to go through, the hoops they had to jump through in order to arrive at this happy ending. And if you, Dr. Mitch, and you, Dr. Mark, can facilitate the journeys that these heroes have to make, then bravo. Oh, it's such important work. You can tell I'm feeling very passionate about this.
I think these stories will not only be helpful to other injured veterans, but because they do have a positive trajectory where they end up, you learn, you know, from them first person, you know, what it takes to persevere in this area, you know, and I think that the general population without disabilities will learn a lot about sexuality in its broadest conception than just a narrow focus. So I think that anyone who watches this, you know, who has any, you know, questions about their own relationships, and I talk about emotional intimacy and physical closeness both, you know, they'll learn about the incredible amount of potential and possibility there is, you know, for their own lives.
Yes, and you and I, Mitch, talked about this when you were on the program on the 21st of February, so 2 weeks ago. And I really, if any of you listeners haven't heard that program, I encourage you to download it, because Dr. Mitchell Tepper has a wonderful book, Regain That Feeling, Secrets to Sexual Self-Discovery. And it reveals that you don't have to break your neck, as Dr. Mitch did so many years ago. You don't have to break your neck to be a great lover, but you can learn a lot from somebody who has. So Dr. Mitchell comes from this, he comes to this with a lot of knowledge, personal and professional, because you've worked a lot with disabilities and sexuality.
Yeah, that's my primary focus area over the last 30 years.
Yes. And so you turn something that could have been just life-ending in terms of an emotional life and depression.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, doing counseling or education when it comes to sexuality,
yes,
is difficult for many people. So then you add in another dimension, catastrophic injury,
right,
and sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes it that much more difficult. So we have to overcome this and address this issue head on.
And Dr. Mitchell Tepper is offering a special online training which reveals the healing power of sex. And I just got this email from you today.
Great.
Mitch.
Great.
And it's a free online training on how health professionals can help injured vets reach psychological and physical contentment, even when happiness and fulfillment seems impossible. And you are going to answer some pretty amazing questions, like, How to Stop Psychological Trauma from Chipping Away at the Foundation of Human Interaction, and we've already been talking in general about that. How to Help Injured Veterans Heal Their Relational Wounds. We've also been discussing that. You'll get into it more, I'm sure, with this online training. And The Power of Touch and Why It Can Restore Relationships. And Sex Smart Films, Dr. Marks, Sex Smart Films. I was looking at your site again last night, and under the category sex work, you've got sex workers reporting that touch is underrated. And I was talking in Victoria, B.C. last week to some seniors, and seniors often are, they're just touch deprived. So many are. They just touch is so, so important.
I remember hearing from at a group, mm-hmm. one woman said she gets her hair cut more often because she gets touched.
Right. Well, that's my favorite example of older ladies getting going to hair salons is that they get their head shampooed and massaged, and it's such a legitimate way to be touched. And, if you have, I know my mother who's now almost 95, and she's now been widowed 3 times. She's always been a very sexual person. People could joke and say she's killed off her husbands, but actually that's a bad joke because my father was killed by a truck when I was 14, so that was her first really sad. But my mother's always, and her mother before her, a very kind of sexual, sensual person. And so I thank my mother and my grandmother a lot for my positive sexual attitudes and behaviors, really. And but I can see that my mother needs to be touched. She's used to more touch, and so I think her children are all aware of that. And certainly, when I visit her in California, there's lots of touch, and my fiance Brian will rub her back, and my mother just goes like, oh, the power of touch. Oh, it's just, and then it releases oxytocin and endorphins, and incredible.
When
it's so healing.
Have trauma, it's often so ingrained in their body, and sometimes all the talk in the world isn't going to help. And there are people who just can't stand touch, people who've been sexually abused, people who get triggered by sensations and they get flashbacks. So, we need to get that PTSD or whatever under control.
That's
but,
right.
There have been plenty of stories of people who use touch. And like in Tassandra and Casey's situation, I was concerned about the interview itself because I'm asking people to share with us information that's very painful and bringing up stuff from the past. So I want to do no harm, And so, she has a massage table in their bedroom, and, when he needs to relax, she gives him a massage, and that helps kind of straighten between the PTSD and the brain injury, helps ground him. And so that was their plan for the evening after we left was to give him a massage.
Yeah, I can understand how the massage would help him be grounded and perhaps even halt or diminish anyway the flashbacks.
Yeah, and we haven't really talked about actual sex yet, but I asked.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, by the way, that's also very well, you in the films on Mark's Sex Smart Films, you're there under the disability section. You, Dr. Mitch, are there showing a number of things about ED and Tantra and So, yeah, let's talk about sex and disability.
But we were going to talk just, yeah, I asked Casey if, you know, sex ever triggered a PTSD event, because for some people I've talked to, that does. So, you know, they get aroused in a positive sense, but that triggers, you know, it goes off and it triggers a PTSD event instead of a pleasurable event. And he said, no, you know, that's never happened to me. But he said, afterwards, I begin to feel guilty about how I treated my wife. I begin to feel guilty about things I did that I should feel guilty about. And so that, you know, opens up this whole vulnerability, because he had been, you know, very aggressive with his wife around sex, and the sex was very, you know, disconnected. You know, it was, you know, about him, and, you know, it wasn't the kind of loving kind of mutual sex that they had before his injury, and they were very, very sexually active couple. And so for some people that could trigger it, and then we have to work with that. But in his case, it was, you know, when he was, you know, more affected by his PTSD, you know, sex was more animalistic. But afterwards, you know, he felt this, you know, emotions, not necessarily in a good way. I mean, maybe good that he felt bad the way he treated his wife and, you know, about the other things. But he said he would lead him down into a dark hole, you know. So you know, without help, you know, without preparing people, discussing that sex could trigger this, or after sex this could happen, you know, people could begin to avoid things too, you know. And, you know, for her situation, you know, I asked her, you know, how did you transition from being angry about how he was disciplining your child, and that was like a horrible story we're not going to tell here out of context, to having sex with this man? And she said, it was something I wanted to give him, and she would drink. You know, and so that brings up a whole nother thing. How many people, you know, use substances or get drunk to a certain point that have histories? I mean, she has histories of sexual assault even before the military. So she learned, you know, to lower her anxiety or inhibitions by drinking. And so, you know, no one's addressing this, you know, and I'm sure this is going on in other people's homes too. So, you know, they could have used help, you know, 15 years ago. So you know, I found him in a good place because of, like, her instincts. She saw, you know, when we take the histories we talk about before, and they had a very, very loving, positive relationship before his 18-month deployment, and she saw something in him that was still there, and she fought for it. And you hear that over and over again. And he, you know, came to his senses. He said, you really have to take a good, honest look at yourself. And he said he'll be paying back his wife and his child, you know, for the rest of his life. You know, so he recognizes, you know, he was in a bad place and he did bad things. And he's making restitution every day of his life.
That is a beautiful story. And this man... wow, he had a lot of revelations, and it was almost spiritual.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in some of these situations where people were together and they stayed together, there's a certain amount of, you know, I'm going to call it altruism on the part of the partner that wasn't injured. It takes a lot of strength to kind of put your own needs aside, right? Because you see something in somebody, and you're risking your own health, you know, and safety to save another people. So these people at home are, you know, as the Elizabeth Dole Foundation has the Hidden Hero campaign, they're hidden heroes. I mean, they're keeping these, you know, men or women, they're keeping these people, you know, out of harm's way, and they're loving them when no one else does. In one instance, or some instances, I'm sure many, but there's J.R. Martinez. He was with a soap opera and then Dancing with the Stars. But in his book, he talks about being single, and he was also burned over probably 85% of his body or more. But he talks about, you know, his mother being there for him, and his mother having this, you know, love for him that was unconditional and how that helped him move forward. So, you know, whether it's somebody getting this unconditional love from a parent or from a lover, you know, it's absolutely important when people are going through some very dark times to have one person that you know loves you no matter what, no matter how you're behaving, you know, because I often hear people say he's not the same person, right? I'm like,
right.
Yes, he is the same person or she is the same person. They're just behaving differently because of the whack out, you know, things that happen and stuff in their brain. But deep down, you know, that's the same person who left. They've just been through some horrible experiences. Their brain is acting differently and they're behaving terribly, you know,
mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, I'm not saying we should, well, I don't know if I'm saying maybe we should cut them some slack, you know, I don't, you know, they're, it's, everything gets into fine lines, you know, but, you know, in these situations, if somebody had, you know, a stellar reputation before and a good relationship before, and the only thing that happened was an 18-month deployment where someone was forced to do horrible things or you know, were in their job, you know, they had to do it for the greater good, then that person, I think, deserves some slack.
And
you know?
Forgiveness. And I think most, and I put myself in this category, most sex therapists today look at the whole person and try to help men and women redefine what it means to even to make love, because the effects of physical problems doesn't necessarily mean that the couple can't experience the pleasure and joy of being physically intimate with each other. And and that's I have experience with some of those clients. Not as dramatic as what the couples you're talking about, but still the issues are there.
I'm still getting my arms around this altruistic issue because I talked with another, you know, a chaplain, and he said, "Well, no, if they were in a dangerous situation, I would tell them to get out." You know, like he would advise them to get out of that relationship right away. Yeah, if they were in danger. And so I think it's up to each individual to decide, not for me to decide for them, you know, what to do. So.
Oh, we've got some pretty serious issues. I want to go back to sex smart films because this is something that if listeners haven't gone to sexsmartfilms.com, you should. So Dr. Mark Schoen's, this is his website, and you've got, like, Sex and the Handicapped. You've got a wonderful film from Sweden. That goes back a ways, doesn't it, Mark?
We have 430 films on the site.
Yes.
Everything from sex education for young children to sex therapy for adults dealing with all sorts of issues, including disability, which we have Mitch's films in there. We have condom commercials and public service announcements about sexuality from 50 different countries. And if you want to get a sense of where the United States is in terms of comfort level with sexuality, you have to look at some of these.
Indeed. And
so
the U.S. is kind of falling behind, aren't we?
His site's been called the Netflix of sexuality education.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's a perfect description. The Netflix of sexuality education.
That was in a review.
Yeah.
It's something for everybody.
It's perfect. And you know, you have also pleasure maps, the importance, going back to the importance of touch.
Yes. And we have a series on sensate focus exercises, which some people get to by way of their therapist, and some people are doing self-help. So it's interesting to see the mix. And the interesting thing is also there are probably users from about 60 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have an internet connection, you have the ability to connect to these films. So,
and that's fabulous. And you can see that a lot of, especially a lot of the Scandinavian countries, are so much more enlightened than we are and so much more open, and they have fewer unwanted teenage pregnancies, et cetera, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a, if you look country by country and you look at the films that are more graphic and more sexually explicit, and then you look at the teen pregnancy rate and the HIV rate in those countries, they're lower. And I don't think it's a coincidence.
I don't either, of course.
Because those countries that are showing the more graphic images in their commercials and public service announcements are doing more education in their schools because they're comfortable with sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a funny story.
Yes.
Last January, Sweden aired a little cartoon of dancing genitals. And basically, it just was a cartoon of a male and female genital, and they were dancing, and there was music. And it was just to teach children the names of the body parts.
Uh-huh.
And it aired on television in Sweden. Now, what was interesting is, number one, that they aired it on television, and number two, they did get some complaints. Not many, but there were some people who didn't feel their four-year-olds should be seeing that. So, interesting.
Well, if it had aired here in the U.S. and it wouldn't have been allowed, there would have been a much bigger outcry, don't you think?
Oh, you know, there's a French commercial for bottled water.
Mm.
And it opens up with a mother breastfeeding her child, and you hear slurping, and then you cut to the mother and she's drinking out of bottled water and slurping. And when you think about it, last year there was a parenting magazine in the United States that had a mother breastfeeding on the cover. Within 48 hours of that hitting the newsstand, the publisher was forced to pull the magazines because people were complaining about a breastfeeding woman.
Oh. Oh, good heavens.
Yeah. So.
I can say, as a woman who breastfed each of my children for a year, my daughter and then my son, it was such an intimate, wonderful experience, and so healthy for the children, healthy for me. And then there's all this oxytocin that is in breast milk, so it helps the mother and the baby bond. I just can't think of anything that is sweeter or more pleasurable or healthier. And for people to get up in arms about breastfeeding, I don't get it.
Neither do I.
Right.
You know,
the milk is delivered in a really nice, fancy way, isn't it, for the child?
Well, what told me a great story about United States attitudes, I was in Denmark when I was in graduate school.
Mm.
And one night we were watching television, and they had a four-year-old child. And there's lots of nudity on Danish television.
Mm-hmm.
And the little boy is there watching. No problem. Well, an American show called McCloud came on. And all of a sudden, a fight breaks out in the TV show. The mother grabbed the little boy and hit his eyes. She didn't want him to see the violence.
Right.
And I remember going to class the next morning, telling this story to a friend. And I said, in the United States, children can see people's heads getting blown off as long as they're wearing clothing.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's an amazing way to put it, and sadly true.
Yeah, but in Sweden, they do censor violence on television.
Yeah. So what is, let's talk about in the last few minutes of this program, how people listening, we've got a live listening audience, we have a bigger audience that hears the archive show. So how can people get involved with your documentary, the you, Dr. Mitch Tepper, you, Dr. Mark Schoen, how can people get involved in this really important effort that you're making on making love after making war? How can people get involved?
The easiest route is to go to loveafterwar.org and sign up for the newsletter. And so you'll be kept in the loop. And from there, you could click right through to Facebook, like our Facebook page, and you can watch the pilot under the tab pilot. And if you're so moved, you can contribute under the contribute tab. So it's easy to remember, loveafterwar.org.
Yes.
Just go there, and you could learn more about the project. You could watch the pilot, and you can give.
Okay, and I'll put that in my summary of today's program.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. I'm just thrilled to be able to talk with both of you men. I know you both. I admire you. I respect you. And I'm glad that my program is able to promote your wonderful efforts. And there is the music, which means we have to stop. Thank you, Dr. Mark. Thank you, Dr. Mitch.
And thank you, Dr. Diana.
You're welcome. We'll do this again soon. Bye-bye, everybody. Nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Mai tuoi piedi, tap, tap, tap. Mai tuoi piedi, tap, tap, tap. Happy feet, ta-da-da, happy feet, ta-da-da, happy feet. Oh, oh, I love it,
love it. Happy feet, ta-da-da, happy feet, ta-da-da, happy feet. Probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare.